Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
When we think of making history, we tend to think of good things, especially in sports. Historic titles, historic numbers, historic greatness. Well, we've got some history in a KU K-State game for sure, but none of it was great. Historically bad offense for both teams in a KU win in what feels like some sort of historic low season for college basketball. We will analyze. A lot of people are asking, will Baylor play enough games to win the Big 12? It's a real question. The league put a rule in place just for this scenario. Baylor has only played 9 games so far in the league, 6 fewer than Kansas. It's all because of COVID, they say. We'll tell you what the threshold is for Baylor to qualify as league champs. Sports wagering seems likely in Kansas this year. Senate Bill 84 is poised to make it through the House to the governor's desk. We'll outline the details for you on how this will work as a consumer. The numbers are in from the past week in Texas, the power numbers. The liberal media is caught lying again, trying to defend wind power and green energy. The numbers, absolute facts, cannot be argued. Wind power the last week in Texas down 93%. Gas power up an astounding 450%. More details coming up on this media scandal in just a few minutes. A high school in Topeka is going to have to change its name because its founder 100 years ago didn't know what would be appropriate culturally in 2021. How did people not know that 100 years ago? The Biden administration is now backing building a pipeline after canceling 42,000 jobs in the U.S. by shuttering one. You won't believe where this pipeline is. Honestly, you won't believe this story. Chris Cuomo can't talk about his brother, the governor of New York, because he's now in a scandal. The brother is. This is the worst offense of journalism's lack of integrity I can ever remember, and somehow should just be flat out illegal. And have you ever gone fishing and caught a grouper? I'll bet you didn't know how big they grow, especially in the Gulf Coast, as a couple of anglers recently found out. It's all ahead on KKHI, brought to you by Buck Roofing and Construction, online at rbuckroofing.com. Ron Buck's available 24/7. Or if you'd like to call the office and schedule an appointment for this spring, for them to come out and inspect your roof. This is just a free service. It is a great idea. Even if you just have a couple small repairs, even if you have nothing wrong with your roof, if your roof is only like 5 years old, you should still check it out after a winter like this. And if they're going to climb up there free and inspect it for you, take them up on it. There really isn't much more important than the roof over your head. A lot of times it's a very inexpensive fix for a couple of shingles or some flashing or something like that. Very rarely is it, hey, you got a real problem up here, or it's time to think of a new roof. And when he does, almost everyone he says, you need to think of a new roof, he almost always tells you, hey, you got a couple of years here. You got to save up your money. You got a budget for this, whatever. You don't have to do it now, but you do need to be thinking about a new roof. If your roof is older and you want to get it inspected, have it checked out by Ron Buck and his team. 384-2680. Anywhere in Kansas City, Lawrence, Topeka, Manhattan, Buck Roofing is there for you. 913-384-2680. You'll sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. Elite Automation. I was talking with my friend Brad over Elite Automation. He was very distraught over the passing of Rush Limbaugh, and he and his son had listened to Rush Limbaugh for many, many years. And these are really good folks that have a great company and a great business. And I was, I shouldn't have been taken aback because I know him well enough now to know that, you know, these things are important and they matter. Look, this is a great American and this is a great, great company, Elite Automation. They do wonderful things for commercial buildings, schools, churches, commercial buildings, warehouses. They help you save thousands of dollars every month on your energy costs. This is more important than ever. They have control systems and design systems that they put in and design it specifically for your building to save you thousands and thousands. But they will also do consulting for you. If you're not ready to make the investment in your property right now, or if you just manage a property and you don't own it and don't have the clout to purchase the equipment to put in there to make a difference, they'll come consult at your building for free. And if they save you money, if they can save you money, you pay them a portion of what you save. It's pretty simple. It's easy. It's online. EliteAutomate.com. Go to EliteAutomate.com. That is the website. You'll learn everything you need to know on how to save big with this great company. Fry Orthodontics, 12 locations in the area for your convenience. Dr. Jeremy and his team are the best anywhere. Adults prefer Invisalign products. These are non-invasive. You really can't see them. We're wearing masks out and about anyway. It's the perfect time to fix your smile. If you've put this off for years, there's never been a better time than right now to fix your smile. Think about all the times you go to the store or do whatever and you're wearing a mask. If you've been a little self-conscious about having either braces or Invisalign, that solves that, especially with your teenagers too. If they've been a little self-conscious, let's get this done. I'm telling you, a beautiful smile for life will make a difference for your child. It did for my daughter. We're so pleased at the treatment she got at Fry Orthodontics. They're online at fryorthodontics.com. First appointment is free if you mention the podcast, 469-9191. Fry Ortho, your smile is just the start. We'll start with sports. History made, bad history made, in a game, and we'll talk a little bit about the race and so many other things ahead on KKHI. Hit it!
Sports, politics, life. Joslyn's Jewelry presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Well, it's a tough call on this edition of Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, but we're going to start with sports because it is so rare that something so historically, epically bad happens that we just can't ignore it. And that happened in, I guess, what used to be known as the Sunflower Showdown. I just don't remember a whole lot of compelling football or basketball games. It's been a while, maybe 3 years ago, some basketball games between KU and K-State, but it's been a long time since this has been any kind of a compelling rivalry in either of the two main sports. And on Wednesday night at Bramlage Coliseum, Kansas State set a record for fewest points ever scored at Bramlage by the Wildcats as they lose 59-41 to Kansas. And we will not spend much time on K-State. We'll get to Kansas in a moment. I think Kansas State was 3 out of 24 from 3, and that's terribly misleading because they weren't that good. I mean, they literally hit a couple late in garbage time to put 41 points on the board, and they hit a couple of three-pointers late to get to that number. It was such a futile effort that it's just not worthy of much analysis other than 3 for 24 from 3 is misleading. It's misleading in a good way. They were not that good. They were not 3 of 24 worthy. The greatest stat of the game, this is just remarkable. Kansas State starters, the five players they started the game with, the Kansas State starters scored a combined 17 points in the game. I mean, you just can't be that bad. Let's not waste a lot of time on Kansas State other than to say it's clear that both these coaches, Bruce Weber and Bill Self, have decided their teams are woeful offensive compared to what they normally are, and both coaches have said, we're just going to rely on defense. We're going to coach the defense up. We may not have skilled shooters. We don't have guys that can score off the dribble. We don't have a bunch of layups or slam dunks at the rim on this roster, so let's go play defense and see what that gets us. And both these coaches the defenses are clearly improving for both teams. Kansas State has remained in games. They were sort of in this game. I think it was 3 points at one point in the second half. They were in this game only because their defense was holding Kansas to a performance that was absolutely dreadful, even by Kansas standards this year. And this is Bill Self's, perhaps his worst offense ever. We'll see how it plays out through the rest of the games. But this is probably his worst offensive team ever. But Kansas State's defense clearly has gotten better. They've made strides. They've played lower scoring games, and they're staying in games. They just don't, as I said yesterday on the podcast, they can hold an opponent within 5 points with 5 minutes to go, and they just don't have enough offense to win a game. So it doesn't really matter that you go out and you play great defense. And Kansas State has done some nice things defensively. They've improved, but it's not going to help them because they simply can't score. It's a very simple formula. You take Nigel Pack out of the equation and get in his face a little bit and keep him from having any kind of a good night, and you beat Kansas State easily, and that's what Kansas did. Kansas, clearly, their defense is improving, and this is what he has decided to do. The offense does not look like it's improving. They're not getting easy baskets to the rim. They don't have anybody that scores off the dribble. They're number 58 in the country in offense, and it's only the second time ever since Bill Self has been there that they've been outside the top 30 in offense nationwide, and this is by a wide margin. They're just not very good offensively because of the two things I just mentioned. They have some guys that can hit some threes, and they've had good nights where they've hit threes and looked pretty good offensively. But as a rule, game to game, Kansas is missing the two things that it always has. It always has somebody who can create a shot on their own, off the dribble, and score the ball. And they always score easy baskets at the rim. And they really don't do either of those this year. As we said on the podcast on Wednesday, Bill Self said recruiting has caught up with him. finding 18-year-old men that can really shoot, really score off the dribble, and are really good hand-eye coordination, shooters, touch, passes, things like that. That's the hardest thing to find. Finding athletes to play college basketball is not always that hard. The football equivalent is this. You know, you can find a lot of guys that are really fast to play wide receiver. You can even find guys that are 6'3" that can jump up and go get it. But how many times do you watch college football and see teams that just don't have receivers that can catch the ball? They can't. They got bad hands. They can't catch it. It's the same thing in basketball. You're looking for scorers. You're looking for shooters. You're looking for guys that are gifted. Yes, over the course of 4 years, they can improve. They can get on your campus. You can teach them a better technique to shoot. You can work with them on fundamentals. You can teach them how to use their shoulder to dribble drive and do some things like that. There's a lot of fundamental things you can teach over time, but you can't teach greatness. You can't teach natural scoring ability. And right now, Kansas just doesn't have the natural score. They've got some nice three-point shooters. There's no question about that. They got some guys, you know, Abaji and Brown can both heat it up. They got some guys that can you know, really fill it up from the outside. Wilson's a nice player. You know, they've got some nice pieces. They just don't have the great pieces. They don't have the NBA players. They don't have the guys that are just flat-out studs. And it showed in a game like this last night where they looked horrendous offensively against Kansas State. They did get to 59 points, which is pretty good, I guess, for as futile as it was, as bad as it was, as early as it was. Kansas has got some work to do on that front. Kansas is in a five-team battle for second place in the Big 12. And I say that believing that Baylor will get to the threshold of number of games played. A number of you have emailed me and reached out and said, you know, what do you think of Baylor? Should Baylor be allowed to win the Big 12? Because they've only played 9 games at this point. I think KU's played 15. K-State has played 14. They haven't missed any games. They've rescheduled what they've missed, and they've accomplished that. Look, there are different kinds of schools, even in the Big 12. Baylor is the team that won't play. They did this in football. They're doing it in basketball. I don't know why, but it's clearly their athletic department's philosophy that we're going to follow the rule. If we're not healthy and we don't have enough players, you know, we're not going to play. We're not going to take losses. Kansas State, to me, is the opposite. Kansas State is the program that it just looks like they completely fell on the sword this year. You know, they were 4-0 in first place in the Big 12, and COVID just ripped through them. It had started when they beat Oklahoma, okay? They had a bunch of players out for the Oklahoma game, but they had their quarterback. Then their quarterback gets hurt. Then they have games where they have as many as 30 guys out that don't have COVID, but they were in contact with people with COVID. The debacle was the Iowa State game. They should have never played that game. If they were Baylor, they would have postponed it or canceled it and said, we're not playing it. We don't have enough players to go to Ames and play this game. It was a complete and utter embarrassment for Kansas State and college athletics. But I think at Kansas State, the athletic department looked at it like this entire year is a mulligan. Nobody's losing eligibility. It's better to go play and get the experience with players that are not losing eligibility than to not play. Clearly, that's what they've been doing in basketball. They now lead the country in freshman and sophomore minutes in basketball games. More freshman and sophomore minutes have been played by Kansas State than any team in the country, and it shows. It absolutely shows. But next year, those freshmen and sophomores will still be freshmen and sophomores, but they won't be freshmen and sophomores. So I sort of understand what they're doing, and I know that Kansas State fans want Bruce Weber out, but since this is what they have chosen to do, it seems to me he would have done this in alignment with the athletic director. And you have it painfully, historically ugly and brutal nights like they had Wednesday night at Bramlage Coliseum. But for Kansas, they're in this race, and people are asking, what does Baylor have to do? Can Baylor really win this thing if they only play 14 or 15 games? What if they don't get there? There's a rule in the Big 12. Play 4 or more games less than the league average. They will add the number of losses to your record that bring you to the league average. In other words, you just lose them all. So if the number winds up being 16 games is the average, and Baylor goes 13-0, they're going to add 3 losses to them, and they'll be 13-3. That will still be good enough to win the league because everybody right now has 4 or more. Kansas is in a 5-team battle for second place. To me, it seems terribly unlikely that the Jayhawks will finish second. They have 5 losses. A couple of teams only have 4. K KU plays Tech, Texas, and Baylor to finish out. Texas Tech and Texas are both in the battle for second. Baylor is alone in first. So it doesn't look like KU, to me, is going to get to second place, but they are still technically in the race for that, in the battle for that, in a weird year of COVID where that is your rule. Now, all these schools are different. They're going to gauge things differently. Seems to me Baylor, you know, they've missed a lot of games against good opponents, and they have found a way to play Kansas State and Iowa State. So I don't know what's going on there. I'm not an expert on Baylor. I do know that they did the same kind of thing in football. Maybe it's strategic. I don't know. They'll look really hard at this afterwards, and it will stay within the conference. But if Baylor is skirting around the rules and using things to their advantage, there will be an outcry in this league. There will be some sort of punishment or change or something to Baylor if indeed what they're doing is basically nefarious. If these are just shenanigans to win conferences and win games and do the best you can, then that's a bad look for Baylor. But I have not heard a lot of that yet. It looks like it from most of us watching. It has a bad appearance. But there's some time left in the schedule. The conference ends early. There's time in between the end of the regular conference season end and the tournament start at T-Mobile Center in Kansas City. There's time to reschedule a game or two and get a couple more on the schedule for Baylor. Look, I don't think anybody questions if Baylor's the best team in the league. I don't think this is going to require an asterisk to give them a regular season Big 12 title. And I think if they're healthy and they come to Kansas City, I think they'll win the Big 12 tournament as well. I think it's all on the line for them to be the second overall seed in the tournament, to be number one, a one seed, and all those things. So I don't know. I just know we saw an historically awful, dreadful basketball game last night. Each program, by their own standards, historically bad. Kansas under Bill Self, historically bad offensively this year. Kansas State under Bruce Weber, just historically bad. 41 points, the worst they've ever scored at Bramlage Coliseum. And it's two coaches that are highly paid. They're smart guys. They've won a whole bunch of league championships between them. They've made deep runs in Final Fours and, in Bill Self's case, a national championship. These are not unaccomplished coaches. These coaches know what the hell they're doing. And they've both thrown up their hands and said, we're just going to coach defense at this point because we're not going to be polished offensive machines. Well, we'll try to get better. You know, Kansas has a little bit more growth probably to their offense remaining than Kansas State does, but it's futile at this point. What you can do is you can scheme defensively, you can put your best defenders on the best scorers on the other team, and you can hang close and give yourself a chance to win. And as ugly as it was for Kansas, because they hung close much of the night, you know, they hung close with the lead that stretched anywhere from 3 to 9 for a good part of the game. They weren't putting K-State away, even though they were playing great defensively. That's probably the norm for Kansas. That's just probably the norm for them. When you're not great offensively, it just becomes very hard to pound somebody and put them away. Had to address that up top because it's just historically bad, and wanted to put into context what will happen if Baylor doesn't play more games. A lot of folks have asked about that. That's the rule within the league. Now you know. The Royals have begun spring training. We won't spend a lot of time on the Royals today, but I want to update you on a couple things going on. Danny Duffy, starting pitcher for the Royals, has switched his jersey number to 30 to honor Yordano Ventura, who died a few years back, who was part of the Royals World Series team and the rotation. So Danny Duffy is honoring Yordano Ventura with the number 30 this year. There is a lot of talk about the Royals. Well, first of all, for the first couple weeks, they're not going to need a 5-man starting rotation. They're going to only need 4. It's going to be real interesting to see how the Royals work their young pitching in the rotation. The bullpen was better than the starters last year, but the Royals were above middle of the pack in pitching. They pitched okay last year. They're the 8th best bullpen. There's reason to believe that the Royals pitching could really make a step, and I think that's why the Royals have added a couple of bats. With Benintendi in left field and Santana at first base, they've improved the lineup and maybe the defense over what it was last year, and I think they're expecting the pitching to make a step up and maybe become in the top 10 in baseball. And if it does, the Royals will be competitive. They might be contenders, but they'll at least be competitive. You know, if you're top 10 or something in pitching, you're going to be a decent baseball team. So if they start the season with 4, most teams go with a 5-man rotation. Mike Matheny mentioned yesterday at his Zoom call that the Royals are now talking in season about going to a 6-man rotation. There's a couple of reasons for this. The main reason is We have a lot of young pitchers that we want to see what they can do and let them play this thing out as we go forward and find out what our rotation is going to be. The Royals want to give opportunity. Like, they probably won't go to the sixth man because of injuries. Danny Duffy at some point is going to be injured because that's what he does, right? So there's going to be guys that work their way out of the rotation through injury and things like that. So maybe they don't spend a lot of time with a six-man rotation. But the discussion of this is, if we're healthy and if all the pitchers are available, we need to create opportunity for some of our young guys to get in here and get some starts. And they will do that. That will be interesting to see. The belief, clearly, if they go to that, is our young pitchers are better than our older pitchers. And this is where we're going. They're paying Danny Duffy, so he's here and he's going to pitch. I'm not and never have been the biggest Danny Duffy fan. I haven't been. Look, I know it's fashionable if you're the fan of the Royals to love every player. He's just not been my favorite player. I think he is wildly underachieved in his career. I think he's been unreliable. I think he's, while he's a fun guy and very interesting and a terrific interview and those things, I think he's flighty. I don't think he has the mental aptitude to be great. I think he may have had the arm and the stuff to be great, but I don't think he has what it takes to be a great pitcher. I don't think he'll ever have it. I don't think he's ever had it, nor will he ever have it. He walked away from baseball at one point, left for a year. He's flighty. There's just no other way to describe it. But he's made it, and he's made a lot of money, and the Royals are paying him a bunch, and he's going to pitch. And he's part of what the Royals are now, but he is certainly not part of the future. And it will be interesting to see how the Royals balance this year with the future, with the way they handle their starting pitching. Mike Matheny has said what he hears all over camp. He didn't say who started this, but the players are all saying it. They just shouted out of nowhere all day, every day. It's a great time to be a Royal. That seems to be the battle cry of this team, as there's a lot of optimism around the Royals this year. So pretty exciting stuff going on in spring training. Pretty exciting stuff going on in the state of Kansas. Senate Bill 84 looks like it's going to pass this year. Kansas Senate Bill 84 is for state-run casinos and Native American casinos to have legalized sports wagering. This was going to happen last year, and then the pandemic hit. Now, if you can explain to me how a legislature, how a state, how government, during a pandemic, knowing that they're going to need revenue, doesn't get passed during the pandemic an online sports gambling bill that could make millions of dollars for the state of Kansas, how they punted that during, they all blame the pandemic. They said, we would have gotten this done last year except the pandemic. I'm like, that's exactly what you needed to get done during the pandemic. Okay? Sports were going to start up. The Royals were playing. Baseball was on. Football was starting. Pass it. You could have got, you're short on money now. You're complaining you don't have money. You could have passed this last year. So Kansas needs to get on this. Kansas Senate Bill 84 is pretty simple. You're going to be allowed, even if you don't go to the casino and sign up, to take your computer, your tablet, your phone, whatever, sign up with one of the state-run casinos, load an app, presumably put money in it or put a credit card on it or a debit card or whatever, and start betting on games digitally, online. Very simple. Hollywood Casino, for example, on the Kansas side in Kansas City is with Penn Gaming. They own Barstool Sports Casino. Theoretically, you would sign up with Hollywood Casino and Penn Gaming and log on to the Barstool Sports website, and you would gamble right through that. And I am all for this. I'm for it because people don't have to do it. This is a choice you can make. If watching the Chiefs game is more fun because you bet $25 on them, enjoy yourself. Don't buy the $280 ticket. Bet $25 on the game and really have something to root for. It's fun. Yes, some people have problems with wagering, all kinds of wagering. There's no doubt. But we're past that. We've crossed that bridge. We have casinos. We have lotteries. We literally can bet on anything in Kansas except athletic events. And so it's time to do that. And I don't know what they've been waiting on. You will not have to sign up at the casino. This has to pass the Senate, which it looks like it will. It's in the committee. The House will have to approve it, which it will, it looks like. And then Governor Kelly will sign it. Mike Thompson, the longtime meteorologist here in Kansas City, on Channel 5 and Channel 4, who I worked with for many years, is a state senator in Kansas, in the Shawnee, Kansas area. And he has agreed to come on the podcast and talk about this. And we'll do that here in the next few days. I'll get back to you on when that's going to be. It'll be fun to talk to Mike Thompson about that and some other issues, as he is a great conservative politician for the people of the great state of Kansas. But we're looking forward to Senate Bill number 84 getting passed in Kansas and legalizing sports gaming. Hopefully that would be done sometime this summer. You could start playing baseball but certainly you'd be up and running for everything football related in the fall. There simply is no reason to not have this. For every action, there's a reaction department. If you have been or you are a local bookie, and there are many, there are hundreds probably in the Kansas City area, maybe into the thousands of people who take bets from others. Small time, it used to be a thing the government would watch for. They don't anymore. They don't go after these people. Once gambling is legal, they really won't go after these people, because I don't think the casinos want to be seen as, you know, some heavy-handed lobbyist going after individuals who are taking a little cut of the sports gaming. My guess is most people who use bookies now will do both, that they'll have an online account and they'll have their regular man that they use. The regular man is oftentimes more flexible. When your account hits zero with Hollywood Casino, you're going to need your man. If you don't have the cash and it hits zero and you want to bet $100 on the football game this weekend, you call the man. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with some of those folks. I literally know of people that's what they do for a living. And I mean, I could never do it. The people who do it, it seems easy for them. The odds are, the rules are, you always win. The caveat to that is local bookies don't always win. You can have really bad years. The Chiefs one year, I think, went 13-3 against the spread. And it was the same year. It was maybe Alex Smith's last year. Well, you know, once Mahomes took over and the Chiefs started pounding people, it's been hard for the Chiefs to cover. It was a good year for the bookies this year. The Chiefs were not good against the spread. Okay? The bookies locally killed it during the Super Bowl. There were guys who made six figures in one day. Made $100,000 or more just on Super Bowl Sunday. The Chiefs didn't cover, and it didn't go over. Local bookies killed it because everybody in Kansas City was on the Chiefs in the over. They killed it. They did not kill it the year before. The Chiefs did cover in the Super Bowl. So these are the things that happen with these local guys. But there are times where, you know, they have amazingly bad years. The year that the Chiefs were so good against the spread, I think it was 13-3. It might have been 12-4. Kansas was ridiculously great against the spread. So it was a double whammy. People love to bet on the Jayhawks. And they're not good against the spread this year. I'm telling you, local bookies are killing it. The Chiefs were bad against the spread, and KU is bad against the spread. You can't lose right now if you're a bookie. But if you're Hollywood Casino, you can absorb a locally bad year because your casino in New Jersey is doing better. You see what I'm saying? The local bookies, man, it's dangerous. It's a risky, risky, dangerous deal because you're almost always basically just betting against the home teams. You know, the idea of a sports book is to have half the money on each side. That way you make 10% of everything that gets bet. That's the ideal situation for any sports book, is on a Chiefs game to have, you know, $10,000 on the Chiefs, $10,000 on the opponent. You know, you're going to make your 10%. You're going to make $1,000 no matter what. You're going to make $1,000 off that game no matter what happens. And that's the idea of a sports book. Local bookies find themselves in positions where they're basically just betting. Not really booking, but betting against local teams. Weird thing, but we should have sports gambling in Kansas. Once that happens, Missouri will have to. Missouri has just kicked the can down the road. For whatever reason, Missouri's gotten more and more conservative than Kansas. And there's a whole bunch of legislators and senators in rural places that are against this thing. I don't understand why. You have casinos. You have a lottery. Why are you against this? It's just free money. It's free money for you. And there will be a lot of people in the state of Missouri that bet on Cardinals baseball games. You better believe on that. So I don't know what Missouri's waiting on, but once Kansas gets it and gives the advantage to the Kansas casinos, they'll be forced to play their hand because you'll see a drop-off. You'll see people crossing the state line to go to the casino in Kansas or to get the app. This will be good for gas stations and everything else in Kansas. There will be people, when this happens, living in Missouri, that will have to drive across the state line on the GPS on their phone to place their wagers. If you live 4 miles from the Kansas border, you're going to have to drive over to Kansas, park your car, place your wagers, and go home. You won't be able to do it from your house. You'll have to do it on your phone or your tablet in the state of Kansas. They know where you are, and you'll have to be in Kansas. And a lot of people are going to go across the state line and, you know, shop or get gas or whatever. Hey, let's go over there. I'll put my bets in. You know, drop the missus at the store. She's got to run in and get some things. I'm going to put my bets in while I'm sitting there. It's unbelievable what will happen if Kansas is first. They need to get on this. But I think that's exciting, and I think that's a really nice thing. We are brought to you today by Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC, and Excelsior Springs. You know that Mike and his team, you know what the customers say? We just make it easy at Roberts Robinson. Visit the showroom floor and get the great service at Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC. You know, there are very few dealerships around that have all three brands, Chevrolet, Buick, and GMC. That's a pretty rare deal. There's a lot of Chevy dealers, and there's plenty of Buick GMC dealers. There's very few with all of these products, and if they don't have it in their stock, they'll get it for you. They can get it. They literally can get a car for you from another dealer and sell it to you for less than you could get it at that dealership. It's true. They can do this at robertsrobinson.com. Chevrolet, find new roads. Really nice folks. And you know, they'll service your car. They'll come pick your car up and service it for you and return it to you. It's true. It sounds like something you shouldn't do or you should feel guilty for asking about, but they'd love to do it. And you don't have to just live in the Excelsior Springs area, Liberty, Kearney, or any of those places. You don't have to. They'll come get it no matter where you live. They're amazing because they want you to, when it's time to get a new vehicle, they want you to come there. That's pretty cool. Back9development.com, custom home builders. And they're really good. You should check out the portfolio at back9development.com. You will see custom homes, commercial developments, and the all-new Solheim condos at Grand Mere. Now taking offers and commitments on these condos that will be available in September for the first football games. Construction has begun. You'll have the opportunity to go see the view from your condo if you want to check it out anytime this spring. Just call TJ and say, I want to pick my view, pick my condo. These are on the golf course. There'll be pool views. There'll be golf course views, all kinds of great one- and two-bedroom condos starting at $249,000. Contact TJ at back9development.com for more information on the pre-order of the Solheim condominiums at Grand Mere. 785-236-0161. These are great investments. These are going to go up in value. The bio facility is getting ready to open in Manhattan, and there's going to be hundreds of new jobs that are six-figure jobs in Manhattan, Kansas. And once these condos are built and sold, they are going to be hot commodities for resale. If you wanted to keep one for a few years, use it, and turn around and sell it, you're probably going to make a bunch of money down the road because there's a lot of new jobs coming to Manhattan. Pretty cool stuff. Again, back9development.com. That's back, the numeral nine, back9development.com. And our friends at bstock.net, there is no other way. You're crazy to buy electronics anywhere in Kansas City any other way. This is online at bstock.net, B as in boy, bstock.net. Their warehouse is the old Toys R Us building. They ship electronics all over the country. This is a national company headquartered in Kansas City, and they said, what the heck? Let's do an outlet store in the front of our warehouse and sell to local folks even cheaper. And that's exactly what they do. We're talking about hundreds of dollars off televisions, not saving 15 bucks over Best Buy or Nebraska Furniture Mart. We're talking about a lot of TVs. They have Samsungs that are $12.99 elsewhere, and you get them for $8.49 at B-Stock. The storefront, the outlet store, is 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. It's roughly 151st and I-35. Check them out. You will save money on computers, computer products, keyboards, monitors, televisions, anything electronics, bstock.net in Olathe. Okay, we've got some numbers in from the state of Texas. Everybody's talking about the power down there. And if you've been reading the Kansas City Star or other liberal rags out there, they're saying, oh, it's not, the wind has been the most efficient. Wind has been the best. No, they didn't freeze up. We didn't have power outages because of wind or solar or any of that. All right, the numbers are in Texas over the last week. With their freeze out and their rolling blackouts, the numbers are in. These are facts. This is inconvenient for the left, okay? Because they've been convincing people that wind power has not caused any of this. Switching to green energy has been a benefit, and if we hadn't done it, it would have been worse. This is what they're saying. It is a lie. This is not an opinion, folks. I'm reporting the facts from the state of Texas. They've released their energy consumption report for the past week in Texas. Their energy use from wind power over the last week is down 93%. 93%. Wind power is down the last week. Coal power is up 47%. Gas power usage is up 450%. 5%. Can you imagine if they didn't have the ability to more than quadruple their use of natural gas energy in the last week, what the hell would have happened in Texas with wind power being down 93%? Those are the facts. People on the left writing other stories. It really now, we're getting to a point, I believe in freedom of the press and freedom of speech. We're getting to a point, and I'm not a litigious guy. I don't believe in a lot of lawsuits or whatever. It needs to be a crime for the media to state things that are not factual, to get the facts wrong or not report the facts needs to be some sort of a crime. It's criminal. It's happening with Andrew Cuomo. CNN has decided they're not going to let Brother Chris Cuomo comment on Brother Andrew Cuomo, who's the governor of Texas. And so this comes out, and the Washington Post reports that Chris Cuomo's been gagged to say anything about New York, anything about the nursing home cover-ups, anything about his brother. You can't talk about it. Seems like a reasonable policy, actually, because you don't want the nepotism. Nepotism's a dangerous thing in the workplace. It is. And they're basically in the workplace together. But the funny thing is, CNN came out after this comes out and says, oh, this policy's been in place since 2013. CNN literally made it worse by saying it's been in his contract, it's been our policy since 2013 that Chris can't cover his brother Andrew, that we don't think that's right for CNN News, that that's not appropriate. Except all of 2020, all Chris did was have his brother Andrew on his show and talk about how much better New York was doing than Trump. This is one of the worst journalism scandals in the history of American journalism. This is so fake, so fraudulent, so dirty, so corrupt, and so awful, it should be criminal. It literally should be a crime to do what CNN is doing. Because people don't know better. They watch and they still believe it's news, that it's factual, that it's fair, that it's honest. It is the most dishonest thing to have a policy since 2013 that Chris Cuomo, who hosts a primetime show, can't cover and talk about his brother on the air. And then when the pandemic hits, he goes wild with his brother and has him on. And it's unbelievable the things that they did together on the air. They break the policy. And now they say they've reinstated the policy. This is so disingenuous and so awful. It's every bit as bad as not reporting the facts on power usage in Texas. Facts matter. If the policy is Chris Cuomo can't report on Andrew, he shouldn't have been allowed to do it during the pandemic. They make the exception, and now his brother's in trouble in New York, and they say, and it's publicly found out, we're enforcing the policy because Chris Cuomo was coming under fire. Why isn't he talking about Andrew? Why isn't he doing any of this stuff? Why isn't Chris Cuomo this and that? And it's learned that CNN gagged him and said, you can't do it. It's so bad, folks. I mean, this really is the crux of so many of our problems in this country. It's just absolutely dreadful. Topeka Seaman High School will be changing its name. Seems pretty clear. Apparently, Seaman High School was named after a man named Fred Seaman. Fred Seaman moved from Ohio to Kansas in 1920 and built the first high school in Kansas north of the Kaw River. He published the local newspaper. He was the district attorney. He was big time. Fred Seaman came from Ohio, settled in Kansas, and made a difference. Made an unbelievable difference. And they named the high school after him. He was the principal there. He was involved in education. He was involved in newspaper publishing. He was a lawyer, the district attorney. He built the high school. He did all of these things around Topeka, just north of the river, and contributed to growing and building the great state of Kansas. An historic figure. Like all of us, he was a human being. Like all of us, he represented the times in which he lived. Like all of us, he made mistakes. But an overwhelming percentage of everything this man did in his life was great for his community, was great for the people of Kansas, was great for building and settling and doing all the things that they were doing. They're taking the name off the high school because apparently he was part of the KKK. I'm not dying on this hill. I'm not arguing to keep the name. I've thought the name, it's an unfortunate last name for somebody to have, and it's unfortunately weird name for a high school. I don't care if they change the name of the high school. the KKK is awful. And I think at that point in time, some 60 years after the Civil War, being part of the Klan or being, you know, understanding what Kansas was as a free state didn't really fit into what this state was. I think there's a solid argument for changing the name of this high school. The issue they have in Topeka and with the people making these decisions here is the domino effect. The debate is not over Fred Seaman. It's not over really changing the name of the high school because some people have wanted to change it just for the name. It's changing history. It's setting precedent. And what people are wanting, the people that are arguing, not really against, there are people saying, okay, we're going to change this, and this is a reasonable thing to change. But we can't let this be a domino effect that we're going to change everything because we cannot live by some sort of a, we don't want to live in a country that says we expect people in 1920 to live by standards of 2020. That is unreasonable. And if you name something after someone because the community agrees today, they did a great thing, like we have Emmanuel Cleaver Boulevard. Are we going to decide in 50 years that Emmanuel Cleaver believed in things that are completely against what is believed in 2070? Because that's going to happen. Culture will change. Emmanuel Cleaver will be proven to have been a man with many flaws, many bad policies, many things that were bad for the people in his community or district, and we're just going to yank his name off? I just don't want to live in a place like that. I don't want our country to just say, look, I've said this before, we know today we're doing things that 50 years from now are going to be frowned upon. We know that we're doing this. I can't tell you what they are. I don't know what they are. I never thought in my lifetime I'd see legalized marijuana. I didn't think I'd see that. I didn't think I'd see a lot of the things I see today. But we live longer. We live long lives. People change in their lives. They're not the same person when they die that they were when they were born. I've never had the discussion with my mom or my dad, but they were born in the 20s and 30s. I'm guessing their vocabulary has changed significantly in their lifetime. And the way they think has changed significantly. They may have been for prohibition. I don't know. I can't say. Things change. And the danger here is, where do we stop? Do we just change everything? The Shawnee Mission School District is dumping Indians and Braves. That's my high school. 100 years of Shawnee Mission North Indians. It's going to be gone. Where do they stop? Do we change the name of our community, Shawnee Mission? Do we change Shawnee Mission Parkway? Do we change the name of roads, towns, bridges, rivers? Does everything have to go? If you're named after Native American or a person who made mistakes. Here's the problem with all this. Name something after a human being that didn't make mistakes. I want to know who that person is. I want to know who that person is. There is no person. There's no human that what we name things after people for is somebody who did things on the upside that contributed greatly to their community or to their country. Even if they had flaws, you honor them and you remember them. I mean, we honor, let's use John Kennedy for the sake of the argument. My mom loved John Kennedy. She cried and mourned and cried like you can't believe when he was assassinated. John Kennedy was one of the all-time philanderers in the history of the world. He was a womanizer. He was by today's standards, he was a despicable man. He and his brother, they were all on the front edge of Me Too. Right? They were the original abusers of women. And I don't mean physically. Although in Ted Kennedy's case, it's pretty bad. He walked away from a car accident and let a woman die. They did not look at women the way we look at women today. They did not. John Kennedy was a man whore. He was despicable. He was as bad as they get. We taking his name off anything? No, because at the time, women weren't treated like they are today. I have a relative who's older than I am, loves to watch reruns of Gunsmoke. And so he always talks about Gunsmoke. I don't really remember the show. So I've watched it a few times recently. I called them. I can't tell you who they are. And I was talking with one of them recently on the phone. And I said, I've been watching a couple of these Gunsmokes. And I said, it's pretty good. I get it. You know, it's justice. It's right over wrong. It's good versus evil. There's some very simple premises to this. It's in Kansas, which is interesting. It's Dodge City. They mention a lot of towns in Kansas. They talk about Kansas City a lot, things like that. So that kind of keeps me in it. I've watched probably 10 or 15 episodes over the last 6 months. And then I said, you know what? They treat women really bad on that show. And they agreed with me and said, yeah, that's kind of hard to watch. I'm like, the women walk around like slaves. They hang out in the bar, right? In Miss Kitty's saloon or the Long Branch saloon. Miss Kitty's in there. The women hang out like prostitutes, which I guess they are. They're companions, whatever. They get the beers for their guys and they're just hanging out in there. When somebody has, they show a house where a wife is there or they're with a woman or whatever, it's always like two guys sitting at the table and the woman's bringing them coffee and breakfast and just like serving them. They're like an extra in the scene that's some sort of a slave. I mean, it's obvious as hell. Okay, this was what, the 60s and into the 70s? It was a different time and place. Are we going to rewrite every man whore from the 60s that's got his name on something? Because that's the way it was? Because there wasn't much progress yet for women? That there wasn't equality like there is today? No, I don't think you take John Kennedy off anything. I don't. You're a reflection of the times, and human beings make mistakes. And we've got this all over the place. And I just am sick of everything just getting canceled. We're just going to go cancel everything because you didn't know 100 years ago what we know today. I'm sorry. You knew it. You didn't think 100 years ago the way we think today. Therefore, you're gone. I don't even understand this. It makes no sense to me that you ask people, you hold people to a standard 100 years ago to know how society is going to be 100 years later. If that's the case, everything that's getting named today, Manuel Cleaver Boulevard, it's the first thing that comes to mind, forget about it. It's going to be gone. It's all going to be gone. They're going to erase everything. This is absurd what they're doing. The Joe Biden administration, this is classic. We've talked about all the stupid things they're doing hypocritically with the fence around the Capitol and troops, but we can't have a fence and troops at the border, things of that nature. He's canceled the Keystone Pipeline, right? The big pipeline. And 42,000 jobs have been lost now, according to the Labor Department. 42,000 unemployed with the stroke of a pen by Joe Biden closing that pipeline. But we have learned now that the Biden administration fully supports partnering in a pipeline in Afghanistan for the Taliban. You can't make this up. They want to build, the United States is supporting, our new government is supporting a pipeline in Afghanistan as a treaty between the country in charge and the Taliban, brokering a treaty between the two parties that will build this pipeline and you will share it. We're brokering deals between terrorist groups to build pipelines for them to stay peaceful, while closing a pipeline in our own country and killing 42,000 jobs. I literally want to get a sledgehammer and bash my desk right now. You can't make this stuff up. It's so underreported. It's insane. Speaking of canceling and a cancel culture where 100 years ago you may have thought one thing as opposed to today, how about a 3-year time period? Is that a reasonable time period for cancellation? Chris Harrison was the host of The Bachelor. I don't watch it, but I know who he is. It's a silly show. It's very popular. It's been on for years. He's made a lot of money and he's very famous. He asked a contestant this season named Rachel Kirkconnell if there was a nuance in cancel culture. He basically asked, is there a difference? She went to an event called an Old South Party at a plantation in 2018. Anything with the name plantation on it is getting changed. I used to play at a golf resort called Reynolds Plantation in Georgia. When we'd go to the Masters, we'd stay there. It was about an hour from Augusta. We loved it. It's a gorgeous place. It's called Reynolds Lake Oconee now or something, or Reynolds Resort. Reynolds Lake Oconee, I think. They took Plantation off of it. They're taking Plantation off everything. A celebrity, I forget, it was not Justin Timberlake. I don't know who it was. Got married 3 or 4 years ago at a place in the South called something Plantation, and they wanted to cancel this celebrity. And he's like, hey, wait, we didn't know we were doing anything wrong. But now in 2021, the term plantation has to go. Lady Antebellum, the country group, dropped the name Antebellum because it refers to a plantation, apparently. And they're now Lady A. Well, this lady on The Bachelor in 2021, Rachel Kirkconnell, apparently went to a party less than 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, an Old South party at a plantation. And the question was, isn't it weird, or what do you think of the nuance of, you know, that was an acceptable thing to do in 2018, but not in 2021. And they're having this discussion, and he's now dead in the water. He's got no place to hide on this. He's done. At this point, they brought it up, and it's on the show. If he supports her right, okay, if he supports her right to have done this because it was culturally okay in 2018, but not in 2020, if he supports her right, he's cooked. If he makes some big statement against her, he's called a racist because she's black. He's done. He's got nowhere to hide on this one. He has walked away from the show, and they're calling for him to be permanently replaced and gone forever. This is the worst example of cancel culture I've ever seen. He didn't make a statement. He didn't do an action here. He was asking about this, and they were talking about a modern-day topic, the cancel culture, and something called plantation. And I think he was being nice to her that as little as 2 years ago, as a black woman, you didn't think going to a party at a plantation was a bad thing. But now it is. And he's done. He's just done. He's got nowhere to go. No matter which side he picks, he's out. He's either a racist for getting on her, for going and doing this thing, for attacking her, or he's a defender of plantations. He's got no place to hide. He's gone. He's gone from The Bachelor. I can't even believe some of this stuff that's happening. This is probably the worst example, although mine was pretty bad. Again, stating facts about a hiring practices of a football team that are now proven to be factual and a mistake, might I add, which was not a stretch on my part to talk about any of that stuff on the air, because you knew it was a mistake for Andy Reid to hire his kids. We knew it. And it's proven out, and it's ended horribly. And it's bad for the Chiefs, and it's bad for our city. It's all those things. I was right. They just didn't want to hear it. So the big corporations can cancel too. It's not just political correctness. Mine wasn't political correctness. It wasn't it at all. It was just corporations are big. They're coming after you. And they will do that too. Chris Harrison is caught in the crosshairs. He's got cancel culture and a corporation. Disney Corporation is the parent company on him. What a sad state of affairs. We'll end with something fun here. I didn't know this was possible. I once went fishing in the Keys with my sons on one of those charter boats, and we caught these little yellowtail. They were not tuna. These are little fish, you know, about the size of your hand. Little fish. In the ocean, that's a small fish, if you ask me. We're catching these things right and left. We catch like, there's a couple other people on the boat. I don't know. Maybe we got 30 or 40 of them in the boat. He keeps them in the live well. You bring them in. They're pretty good eating. There's not a lot of meat on them, but they're good eating. He says, we'll cut these up at the end, and you guys can take them to a local restaurant, and they'll cook them for you, and you can have them for dinner. Great, so we're doing that. But at some point, after we've had a lot of action and we've caught a lot of these things, we decide to use them as bait. So now they bait the hook with these fish that are live, and we start catching other fish. We eventually caught a nurse shark, which was cool, but we also caught a couple of grouper, and the grouper were big, ugly fish. I mean, big, ugly fish. I think I'm looking at my computer printer right now. I think the grouper was about the size of my computer printer. He was just a big, ugly, fat fish that looked dumb, to be honest. Looked like maybe the dumbest fish in the sea. A lot of people like to eat grouper. I don't like to eat seafood all that much at all. But grouper, I think, is something that a lot of people like to eat. And so we caught these big, ugly grouper, and we released them. We just had decided on the boat that we're all from out of town, and you know, we've got some yellowtail, which are plentiful, and we'll take those to the restaurant and eat those. We're going to release everything else. We caught a nurse shark and released it. It was cool. It was a really fun day fishing. And I won't forget, you know, people are like, oh, you guys caught a shark. It was like a 250-pound nurse shark. Nice fish, right? And we didn't get it in the boat because it's too dangerous. We just got it to the edge. Everybody got to pose with it, take a picture. It was one of those deals. But what I really remember from that day was how stinking ugly and stupid that grouper looked. In person, up close, I was like, man, that is one prehistoric, ugly, dumb-looking fish. And then I came across this story, and I thought, we'll end the podcast with this. In Sarasota, Florida, which is the other side of Florida, we were down in the Keys. This is on the Gulf side. This week, two men went out on one of these very similar deals where you pay a guide to take you out on the ocean, and they caught a bunch of fish, and they caught a grouper. And they had to fight the grouper, which you shouldn't have to fight this long. I think it's like 45 minutes. They fought the grouper. They get the grouper to the boat, and it's bigger than both of them. It's a 250-pound grouper. They get it in the boat. They take it to shore. They hang it on one of those scales like they did in the movie Jaws. It's bigger than either of the men that caught it. A grouper. Some of you are probably laughing at me. I had no idea. I didn't know a grouper could get that big. 250, it's online. You can see the pictures if you want. 250-pound grouper. And you don't believe in sea monsters, really? Y'all don't believe in sea monsters? I do now. If they're pulling out grouper, because the one I saw was about the size of my computer printer. If they're pulling grouper out that are bigger than I am, oh, there's a sea monster somewhere deep, deep down that we haven't caught yet. There's stuff in the ocean we don't know about. It may be way down there, but it's there. If grouper are that big and living that long and getting that big, whoa, that's crazy. You got to see the size of this fish. Crazy stuff. There it is. Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Thanks so much, as always, for listening. Don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button if you could, please. If you want to get the Between the Lines 2.0 podcast and another podcast I put up for the patrons this week, they're available by signing up at kkhasissues.com for $5 a month. Become a patron and unlock all the patron podcasts right now, including the pair that I've put up so far this week. If you want to get those, you can do that. kkhasissues.com. It's real easy to sign up. It's $5 per month, recurring. You can cancel at any time. There is no commitment other than signing up and saying, I'm doing this. If you don't like what you get, you cancel. Pretty simple stuff. So if you want to catch that, go grab it at kkhasissues.com. And as always, thank you so much for listening. God bless you, and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.